you help someone or someone helps you, you turn around, you help someone else. Like, for example, the Everest warped wall. Like, think of a half pipe warped wall. You got guys that will stay, like, that will stay up there for hours just helping people up because you have to climb it. And you can either do it yourself by grabbing on the ledge or grab someone's hand, and they straight up pull you up there. The beautiful thing about that is that there's people that sign up for this stuff that all they want to do is help. Like, that's just in their nature. They'll post up at that particular obstacle the entire event and just help people up that wall. Because once you get to a certain point, 6-7 laps in, you know, it starts at noon and then it ends at noon the next day. But once, you know, the nighttime rolls around, you're fatigued, you can't make it up the wall, you have to have help.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Devin Nelson. He is an ultramarathon runner from my hometown of Topeka, Kansas. And we know quite a few of the same people. And he's running some of the same races. In fact, the race that I was DNF, the Hawk 100 this year, which eliminated only 11 people finished out of 47 starters. Very, very hot, humid. He was one of the finishers, so my hat goes off to him for that. He also runs in the Tough Mudder competitions, and he had a recently was at 24-hour World's Toughest Mudder. So we talk about all things ultramarathon running, and also I learned about the Toughest Mudder competition. I enjoyed this conversation. Hope you enjoy sharing it with us. Here's my conversation with Devin Nelson. Well, and I've seen some of your some of the stuff that you've put on Facebook about your runs. I was like, that's pretty cool. How did you get started as a runner?
Well, I think it originally started in probably 2013 when I originally signed up for a Tough Mudder.
Okay.
Do you know what a Tough Mudder is?
I'm familiar. I always confuse, you know, Tough Mudder and Spartan because I know they're similar. And I talked to a guy who's his Spartan is kind of his thing. And so I always get too confused. So what, maybe tell the difference between what's the difference.
Well, the funny thing now is that like right before the pandemic started, Spartan bought Tough Mudder.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
So now they're all under the same umbrella, but they're still very distinct. Like Spartan is more of the do it yourself, your solo, you know, competitive, as Tough Mudder is more of a team aspect. There's several obstacles that you can't even do without somebody's help.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But that first one was in 2013, was 13 miles, 25 obstacles. Some of them include electricity and, you know, you climb in the mud and you climb over like monkey bars and stuff like that. But that mm-hmm. was, you know, at the time, you know, I had lost quite a bit of weight, probably about 25, 30 pounds. And then was kind of just dwindling, and my friend that I went to high school with asked me to sign up for it. And so I did. And that's kind of what started it. But yeah, I ran Tough Mudders for several years. And then I really didn't get into trail and ultra running until about 2019.
Okay.
When I signed up so you got a Tough Mudder, and then they do what's called a World's Toughest Mudder. And that's mm-hmm. the 24-hour version of it. So you have a 5-mile course, you do that for 24 hours. And I did that in Atlanta in 2019. And, you know, leading up to that with training, I had ran my first trail marathon, which was the Hawk Marathon.
Okay.
And then I ran a 50K, and that was all in preparation for this 24-hour race.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of obstacles are in the Tough Mudder? I mean, I know that there's quite a few. Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw some pictures from your race.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there's everything from, you know, just a standard like they call it Berlin walls, where you just jump up probably about 10 feet and muscle up yourself over the wall. Lots of mud pits, you know, lots of water pits. They have a warped wall. And then the ones that scare people from signing up for this stuff is the electricity ones, because some of their trademark ones is like they have electroshock therapy, which are little tentacles that dangle down and you have to kind of like weave in and out. And if you touch one, you can get zapped. But that's okay.
So kind of like an electric fence. I mean, essentially, yeah. For people who live in the city may not know what it's just wire running, mm-hmm. running along to keep cattle in, and it's electrified, and it's enough to shock a cow. Enough to keep them back. if you're out in the country and you grab an electric fence, you'll remember.
Yeah, but I would probably credit running a Tough Mudder for starting this whole thing. And then, you know, before I worked at Coke, so I work at Coca-Cola, and I'm sure that he's going to listen to this too once I tell everyone that I'm on a podcast. But yeah, his name is Josh, and before I met him. Or do you know Josh Watson?
Josh is the one who actually reached out, and he's heard the podcast and he listened and said, I should talk to you. So
that's cool.
you can blame Josh for the whole episode.
We blame Josh for everything. But yeah, it's kind of a,
no, I take that back. Is it Josh? No, it wasn't. It was Jonathan. I'm sorry. I apologize to Jonathan for confusing him with Josh.
Yeah. Well, a lot of this is Jonathan's fault too, that we do this stuff. But before I met Josh, I never even knew anyone that ran more than a marathon.
Okay.
And he had come back from a 100-mile, or I think he ran a 24-hour race in Tennessee. And he came back and was explaining me this stuff at work. And it was just kind of mind-boggling that anyone can do that. And then, I mean, I knew that like elite athletes did this stuff, and mm-hmm. like, you know, the tip top physical, you know, specimens out there, but not a normal coworker. So that's what started intriguing me. And then he took me on my first trail run. So I'm sure you're familiar with Clinton Lake.
Yes. Yeah. The Hawk course. Yeah. Yeah. The Hawk was my first goal race, was the Hawk 50.
Shout out to the Hawk right here.
Yeah. Yeah. I have two of those.
That's awesome.
Two of those guys, yeah.
Yeah. That's another story from, so 2021 has been, it's been a year.
Yeah. 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 And Jonathan said you finished the Hawk this year.
Yeah.
The Hawk 100.
Yeah. That got really hot.
Yeah. There were only 11 people who finished it, if I remember right.
I was thankfully one of them, but if it wasn't for Josh and Jonathan both pacing me and, you know, pulling me through those last laps, I don't know if I could have finished that one, but, yeah.
So how were you able to keep moving in the heat? I guess because that was my second attempt at the Hawk 100, and
this year.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. So,
and, cool. Yeah. And I got to 34 miles and I was out of the time cutoff by then. It was like, mm-hmm. and you know, I was moving slower and slower and slower because of the heat. And I said, you know, I could have gone on to 50, but I'd already done that. It wasn't, you know, I didn't have anything to prove. And mm-hmm. I said, I'm just,
there were so many,
it's over. Yeah.
Dropped. I credit it to hydration in the beginning. Sometimes going out too fast is a bad thing, mm-hmm. but in this case, like I was probably top two or three most of the race. And then that's when I hit the wall, but I banked enough time to where I could rest and, literally sleep in the middle of an asphalt road. Like I told Jonathan, it was like, I can't make it to, I think it was West Park Road. It's like, I'm going to sleep right here. I just laid down and went to sleep. But, you know, originally the Hawk was going to be my first 100-mile race in 2020. Cause previous to that, the only other race I ran was the 24-hour Tough Mudder in regards to like over 24 hours, mm-hmm. but that was all canceled. So I ran my first 100-miler. It was the Ozark Trail in 2020.
Oh, wow. So
that was my first actual 100-miler in 2020.
And that's a pretty impressive first 100 miles.
That was another adventure in itself, too. But
excuse me, I've just remembered I did not turn the do not disturb off Do not disturb on my phone. So
I should probably do that too.
So I heard something ding and I was like, okay, the only thing I would need, you know, that would be worse than that is the car warranty people trying to call me in the middle of this.
Yeah. Yeah, but
so Ozark Trail was your first 100 mile.
That was my first 100 miler.
Was that in 2019?
It was in 2020.
2020.
Yeah,
oh, that's right. Okay.
I was going to do
they
the
did,
tough.
They did have it in 2020. I forgot.
Yep. They were one of the only few. It was kind of funny. I made a meme that went viral and got like 50,000 shares or something, but it was the rest of the world going like burning up and I'm over here on my phone looking for a 100 miler that's not going to get canceled. Mm-hmm. Because yeah. They all got canceled, including the Hawk. The Hawk was going to be my first one, but that was canceled in 2020. I was just looking around, you know, Midwest races, and the Ozark Trail was the one that didn't get canceled. And yeah. Even though it was point to point, it looked to be, you know, completely overwhelming, but I had, my wife was there, my in-laws, they met me there with my son. I have a 4-year-old. He just turned 4. And they met me at the finish line and I was like, cool. I have to finish this. They're traveling all this way.
Yeah. For, you know, to show your son that, yeah, you can keep on going.
Oh yeah. And then my friend, do you know Miguel Hernandez?
The name is familiar.
He's from Topeka. He lives down in Wichita. I would say elite runner. He's a beast. He's won Honey Badger before. But he's from Topeka, but he paced me for 60 miles and he made sure I got there.
So, like, he almost sounds like the kind of person you need to have pacing him.
Yeah.
So how was it? That was your first 100. How did you do in that? I mean, cause a lot of people, you know,
I finished in 29 hours.
Okay.
And that was my first experience. Like, cause I'd never run more than 50 miles. And then, so once I passed 50, it was all kind of uncharted waters. And it was just the make it from aid station to aid station and just continue on. And, you know, a lot of rallying and a lot of, you know, have you ever ran the Ozark?
No, but I have friends who have. And and I was trying to remember the year 2020. That was decent weather, I think.
Wasn't it? It got unseasonably warm because they have lots of water crossings and stuff that were, and they had little rain. So some of the water crossings that would typically be waist deep were only like, sometimes you could rock skip over them. So that was all fortunate. I don't do very good in the cold. So that was also a good thing.
One year friends of mine were there as helping somebody with an aid station and it got down in the 20s at night. And I think that was 2019.
Yeah. But yeah, that was, and I also wanted the first one to be this epic, you know, epic adventure. And that's what that was. Like, it's funny just talking to it with my wife. She, you know, traveling in the middle of, you know, the Ozark National or the Mark Twain National Forest, going from aid station to aid station. I was more worried about her getting lost than, you know, me actually finishing this thing. But yeah, that was something.
Yeah. So she was your kind of your aid, your aid
she
station.
She always is. Okay. She always is. Her name is Shay. And, you know, we're actually expecting another little one due any day, like technically due Christmas Eve, but you know, she's there every single time.
Yeah. Cause I saw the pictures of you at the World's Toughest Mudder and she was there this year.
Pregnant. Yeah.
I thought that besides chasing, you know, besides having your son there too, right?
My son was not at the Tough Mudder.
At the Tough Mudder,
that was in Nevada.
Okay.
That was just my wife and I.
Okay.
He's been at a lot of them. So he was at the Ozark, but he was not at. I attempted Silver Heels over the summer, and then he was there at the Hawk.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, Silver Heels was my second 100 miler attempt in Colorado, but that one was the DNF.
Okay. So what did you, I know from experience living in Kansas at, you know, around 1,000 feet going up to the mountains oftentimes is difficult. What was your experience there?
So, we Jonathan and I decided to run the entire thing together and we went through the entire training, most of the training together. Cause that was going to be his first 100 miler. And so it was, you know, just training for that. Are you familiar with, you said you used to live in Topeka. Have you ever ran out of the Governor Trails?
I didn't when I was living there, but a friend of mine took me out there. We was there a couple of years ago and ran New Year's Day.
I love it. That's my main training ground zone.
Well, those are some nice hills too. I mean,
so our goal for one day, so the race was in July. I think it might've been May or so of that year. Our goal was to get 10,000 feet of elevation on our watches. And so like we ran 50 miles out there, just hiking hills and running all the hills out there. Cause you can probably get about 10 miles without repeating trails out there.
Okay. And, yeah.
You know, running and running and running. Our wives would come and meet us with pizza and stuff. So that was a big training, you know, cookie for the cookie jar. Mm-hmm. And then we did make a trip out to Colorado Springs one day. I think that was in June. And we ran Pikes Peak Bar Trail. And then we also did Manitou Incline.
The Manitou Incline. Okay. Yeah. That would be a good preparation. I've heard reports of it and I've seen pictures.
Yeah. We got there on Friday and we did, it's ridiculous just saying it, but Manitou Incline repeats. Like we ran up the Manitou Incline and down Bar Trail three different times.
Okay. So for people who aren't familiar with the Midwest or Colorado, describe the Manitou Incline.
I think it's described as like the toughest mile in the world or something, or like just.
Yeah, and you can try to set the world set the record for the fastest known time on it too, if I remember right.
You can try. there's people that just will glide up and down that thing, but it's just, it looks like just a giant staircase up a mountain, and you know, people will travel from all over to just hike this thing, and it's incredible. I've done it. I think I've done it twice, two different times, but
repeats on the mile incline.
Yes. Okay. And then we did the Pikes Peak Bar Trail, which is just from Manitou Springs up Summit Pikes Peak and then down.
Okay.
Which is also the Pikes Peak Marathon course when they hold that, which I think they call that the toughest marathon or whatever. But I ran that in 2020.
Okay. Okay. So what happened with the Silver Heels 100?
Yeah. So Jonathan and I reflect on that race a lot, but it was, you know, we made it 71 miles. So for someone from Topeka, Kansas, you know, that's alone quite like, that is an accomplishment, but that wasn't what
well, anytime you run 71 miles, true, that's a pretty good accomplishment. Yeah.
I told people, I was like, that's not what we set out to do, but it, you know, it was a combination of, you know, the altitude, just overall fatigue on the legs. I think overall elevation was, I think, close to 20,000 for the course.
Okay.
Because it starts in Fairplay, Colorado, and that's just under 10,000 feet. And then it stays over 10,000 feet the entire time.
Okay. I think so. It starts in Fairplay, which is on the other side of the pass from Leadville. So is it similar similar in course to Leadville?
I think so. In this particular, you know, in the course that they had, it was a lot of out and backs, and you know, it was basically out for 50, back for 50.
Okay.
So I guess kind of similar to Leadville, but there were a lot of out and backs. There were a lot of major climbs. It has more elevation than Leadville.
Okay. Okay.
But
yeah, and starting at any like Leadville, starting at 10,000 feet and staying above it for the whole way. That's you don't even climbing the Manitou Incline. That's closer to 6, if I remember right, isn't it?
Something like that. I think that starts at 6, and then or whatever Colorado Springs, starts at. But
yeah,
you know, it's probably a combination of, you know, altitude. Or at least that's what I told everybody. But so this morning I went and ran with Jonathan, and we have a group of Topeka runners that we try to get together. We're actually getting together this evening. And when I tell them that I'm going to be on a podcast, they're going to get a kick out of it. None of them know about it. I think most of them do listen to you though, because your podcast has been brought up in conversation just even way before this, but
okay.
But yeah, like I tell people, it was the altitude. It was, you know, can't do this from Kansas, but honestly, just, you know, the self-criticism is I quit at 71 miles and, you know, that's the reason why.
So yeah, I guess looking back, was it, were you, I mean, that's happens to a lot of people when they, mm-hmm. when they, you know, if they pull the plug after you're done, you're like, well, I could have kept going.
Yeah.
So is that kind of what you're.
Yeah. I mean, we were pushing the cutoff. So both Jonathan and I would say we're pretty good runners, but we have never been fighting a cutoff in any race we've ever done. We've never, you know, been the last of the pack, you know, mm-hmm. so it was different in fighting the cutoffs, trying to climb these mountains and, you know, climb these passes. It was hard, but we were still ahead of the cutoff when we decided to quit. But, you know, I chalk it up to, you know, in all the podcasts I listen to and all the people I listen to, you know, that seed of doubt was there before I even started.
Okay.
And I think that was, I kept letting that seed grow. And it's like, I can't do this. I'm from Kansas. I can't do this. I had so many other life things going on that mm-hmm. like I couldn't shut that down because we had sold our house. We had, you know, we were living with the in-laws, you know, promotion at work, you know, just kids in general. So all that stuff and mm-hmm. just saying to myself, I couldn't do this was the reason why.
So you say you said you went, you went, you kind of went into it with doubts, you said?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, but I'm already signed up for it next year because I'm on the dance hall list, which is what they call their DNF list. And I was like,
oh, wow. Okay.
The only way to get off the dance hall list is to go back and complete the race.
Okay.
So
interesting.
Yeah. The name of it's the Human Potential Running Series. They host all kinds of Colorado races. And I stumbled upon Silver Heels because I think you've had him as a guest, David Tirio.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He ran it, I think, in 2020.
Okay. Like,
you know, it's a Colorado race that doesn't have a lottery. And, you know, I was like, I just signed up for it.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because most Colorado races, you have to have lottery entry or
right, right,
qualifying yeah. races and stuff and just get lucky.
Mm-hmm. So it's open. You don't have to have a qualifying race.
Nope. They used to have. This year he waived it, but I think it's a really cool 100-mile requirement. Like you have to do at least 10 hours of volunteer work.
Okay.
The
Hawk has that for this year.
Do they?
It's not 10 hours. It's four.
4 hours.
Yeah. They're asking for 4 hours of volunteer work.
Yeah. And it could have been trail work. It could have been volunteer work somewhere. It could have been volunteering at like, I volunteered at an aid station at, Prairie Spirit back
okay.
in March.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my actual first time volunteering at a race. So I experienced that side of things, which was an absolute blast.
Oh yeah.
Like that's we were fun. At the, I think we volunteered at the 50K. Have you ever ran Prairie Spirit or on that trail?
No. Now remind, there's, I get Prairie Spirit and Heartland confused.
Yeah. Prairie Spirit's the one, it starts in Ottawa.
Okay. Thank you.
It
yes.
goes through the, all, it's yeah. a rails to trail race.
Yeah, it's a real story. And that's it's one of those things. There's the Heartland, and then there's the Prairie Spirit, and for some reason I can't keep those straight. And I
yeah.
I have run that trail. We last during the pandemic, the running group that I'm part of, the Trail Nerds. Well, it wasn't actually an official trail. We couldn't do anything officially as a club, but it was kind mm-hmm. of an unofficial six. It was an unofficial 100K, and
right.
so.
Yeah.
And so I was on a relay team, and I also was providing aid for a lady who was running solo.
Nice.
And so yeah, we kind of bounced back and forth, but yes, I've run the trail. I hate rails or trails.
I agree.
it's like a 60 mile long treadmill and
we're pretty blessed in Topeka. We have Land and Trail, which is a rails trail or whatever. And then, you know, we have Burnett's Mound, which is a trail system. We have mm-hmm. the Governor's Trail. We have, you know, Clinton Lake, Perry Lake. If you've ever gone to, have you ever been to the one in Manhattan, Kansas?
No, I haven't. No, I haven't.
It oversees the Flint, the Konza.
Okay.
The Konza Prairie. It oversees the Flint Hills, and it's beautiful.
So it's up on the south side of the Kansas River then? Up in the Flint Hills? Okay, yeah.
Yep, they hold races out there too. It's when I lived in Manhattan, I never went there, but now that I've been much more of a runner, I go there quite often.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Topeka to Manhattan is not that far.
Yeah. No, not at all.
Kansas City, it's a little bit. I mean, it's a 2-hour drive for us.
I try to make it up to Kansas City. You said you're a part of the Trail Nerds.
Yeah.
I try to make it up. I've been to Waco once. The only race that I ran from them was the Lake Perry race, which is my first ultra.
Right. Yeah. The Trail Nerds sponsor that.
Yeah. They've been pretty quiet recently.
They have been pretty quiet. The race director has been busy. Mm-hmm. But there are now, I think, two races scheduled for the, for Waco, for, mm-hmm. The Troners races, the alternate Chile run, and I think they're doing the Psycho Summer or the Psycho Winter race in February. So,
oh really?
Yeah. So, and that one, I've been at the aid station, I think 3 years for that, and no, I take that back. Two, both times we've had slush. Ice and slush. Nice. So yeah, it's in Kansas. It's hit or miss for February weather.
It really is. I mean, lately it's been amazing.
Like, oh, yeah. This
weather we're having now is like, it's insane.
Yeah. 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 Record high temperatures here in the Midwest.
Yep.
But, which is good, which is nice. We could use some rain,
mm-hmm.
So tell about the, you said world's toughest mudder. I saw that. So I guess I'd like a little bit of kind of, comparison. What do you do as far as your mental self-talk that you have versus, you know, for a 100-mile trail race versus the tough mudder?
The mental talk of it, you know, because the world's toughest mudder, it's a 5-mile loop.
Right. So you're repeating
every obstacle
for 24 hours. And so it's not, mm-hmm. it's not like a distance. You're just doing it for time.
Yep. I mean, you have goals. It could be whatever you want. Like the first year I did in 2019, it was in Atlanta. So my wife and I drove to Atlanta to do it. I did 50 miles, which is the goal, because you get a special brown bib if you hit 50. But just that year it got very cold. Yeah. I think it got down to about 32 to 35 and you're in and out of water. You're in the mud. I'd put on a full on wetsuit running this thing.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I could see that.
But the community of it is what originally dragged me in to stay in it. And then experiencing the world's toughest mudder community, it's very similar to the ultra running trail community where it's, you know, everyone from all walks of life can do this stuff. But the team aspect of world's toughest mudder is what, you know, will make anyone emotional about it.
Mm-hmm. So you'd like sign up for a team? Is that
how? No, it's basically runner to runner helping, like just runner to runner.
Okay.
'Cause there's people that sign up for this. Well, I guess you can do it as a 2-person relay team.
Okay.
If you wanted to, but the majority of people,
but it's more of that you have to, and you said the obstacles are designed for, you can't do them by yourself. So as you're a runner, you have to be looking for other runners to help.
Pretty much. Yeah. 'Cause it's like you help someone or someone helps you, you turn around, you help someone else. Like,
okay.
For example, the Everest warped wall, like think of a half pipe warped wall. You got guys that will stand like, that will stay up there for hours just helping people up because you have to climb it and you can either do it yourself by grabbing on the ledge or grab someone's hand and they straight up pull you up there.
Okay.
But the beautiful thing about that is that there's people that sign up for this stuff that all they want to do is help. Like that's just in their nature. They'll post up at that particular obstacle, the entire event, and just help people up that wall. Because once you get to a certain point, like, you know, 6-7 laps in, you know, it starts at noon and then it ends at noon the next day.
Okay.
But once, you know, the nighttime rolls around, you're fatigued, you can't make it up the wall, you have to have help. But then there's other ones, for example, like there's a pyramid scheme obstacle where it's a, you know, you climb up a slippery surface at an angle You have to have someone boost you up to grab the rope, and then you got to turn around and then help them up there too, because you can't reach it or jump to it. So it's just kind of stuff, team stuff like that. Like you have a wall that might be too big for you to jump, so you have to boost someone up there so they can get over, and then the person behind you will boost you up, and then it's just, you know, a rolling thing. But you can quit whenever you want. Like I've never actually ran a traditional 24-hour race. My friends always say I should sign up for KUS down in Wichita, because that's where a lot of them will run. I don't know if you've ever done races down there.
I've not done races in Wichita. I've met some people from there, but
yeah, a lot of people from here will run KUS too. But the Tough Mudder, it's just the community. Like it's everyone supporting everyone. You know, you have your own. They have a pit set up where you have like a tent or canopy where every lap you can go in, grab your things if you want, take a break, whatever, and then get back out on course. And that's the only time your people can see you.
Is there at the
Yep. So I did Atlanta in 19, and then it was canceled in 2020. And then I did Nevada in 21, which is the one you probably saw recently.
Right. The one I saw was in Nevada.
And so, yeah. That was, so imagine hot sand running the entire time.
Yeah. Well, when I was seeing the pictures, I was like, where did they get the water? It's like, they would have to truck in the water
because it was in Laughlin, Nevada, which is south of Las Vegas.
Okay.
There's so many regulations with the Colorado River that they couldn't pull from the river, which is typically what they do in these types of races.
Okay.
But so they had to truck all that water in there.
Wow.
And it's interesting how they have it all set up, and it's a company that does this week in and week out, just, you know, from city to city. And then this particular time they post up for a couple of weeks and do the 24-hour one.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's interesting. So for the Tough Mudder, what are some of the other distances? I mean, like if somebody hears this and says, hey, you know, that might be a good goal to have.
Yeah.
You started out at 13 miles. Is that the starting
now,
point?
Now they have 5K, 10K, 15K options. Those are the distances. So, you know, when I first started, they only had the 13 mile option.
Okay.
That was in 2013. Now it's a little bit more, you know, you can sign up for whatever distance you want so that it's not so overwhelming that first time. But yeah, you don't have to sign up for the 24-hour one to start.
Mm-hmm.
Like the next one I'm doing is in April. It's in November or April in Missouri.
Okay.
Is the closest one that comes here. So, and it's the traveling one, and they have 5K, 10K, 15K option, which I did. I've reeled one of my friends into doing it with me. Jonathan is doing it too.
Okay.
So it'll be his first obstacle course race because. Yeah.
So where in Missouri? I guess it's
on the west side of St. Louis. It's actually a winery.
Okay. There's a lot of wineries on the west side.
I know. Along I-70 west of St. Louis.
West of St. Okay.
Yeah.
Le Bourgeois, whatever. Le Bourgeois winery.
I don't know. I don't know the name of it.
Trying to remember the others, because there's one winery right on A-70 west of St. Louis, and
I think that might be it. Actually,
it sits right on the Missouri River, on a cliff. So, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but yeah, that's how I got started doing obstacle course races, and then discovering trails and, you know, getting into just straight running.
Mm-hmm.
And, but like for training and stuff for this, like even for ultras, I don't put in the type of miles that, you know, most ultra runners would. I do a lot of kettlebell workouts and a lot of strength training. And I think that helps in recovery. Like I don't have any sort of plan that I follow. I just kind of pick something to do for the day to work out or to run and go from there.
Okay. So what kind of strength training do you normally try to do for the obstacles? I mean, a lot of runners who are just runners, strength training is kind of the thing where like, we all know we're supposed to do and we don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of core exercises are good. A lot of squats, because you still have to use your legs to jump and to, you know, you don't want to start cramping and then have to jump up to a wall. A lot of pull-ups, which those suck. A lot of burpees, but it's I'm using my wife's computer and they're texting her. Okay. But yeah, a lot of squats, a lot of, you know, I do a lot of traditional, you know, just presses and stuff. I sort of credit my job for good grip strength because I work at Coca-Cola and I drive a truck for them. Okay. But I do a lot of case carrying, like cases of Monster and cases of 20-ounce Coke. And that's using grip strength to grab that case and move it to somewhere else. And it's like, this is kind of helping with obstacle course racing. This is the way I justify working there sometimes.
That's good.
Yeah.
So what are you, I mean, coming back to the 24 hour, a lot of times you can get sucked into the aid station. That's the thing I noticed on loop courses. How do you keep yourself focused?
Don't ever sit next to the fire.
Okay.
That's a rule of thumb anywhere. If you see a fire and you're in a race, don't go sit next to it. Because that'll get you warm and cuddly and cozy, and you don't want that. But it's just, for me, it's I have that fixed goal of, in that particular time, it was 50 miles. I did 65 in Nevada, but for me, having that goal to reach no matter what is what pulls me through it. And sometimes doing ultra math, you know, late at night doesn't quite, you know, I'm sure you know how that goes.
Yeah.
Doing ultra math, thinking you're going to finish at one time, but you know, it's in a 100 miler, it's finished at all costs. That's the goal.
Right.
Yeah, that's the goal. And then you want
to finish before the cutoff.
Yeah. If I run a normal 24 hour race, I think my goal would be probably 100 miles in that distance, because I've done 200 milers and both times they were about the same time. I finished them both in 29 hours.
Okay.
I'm okay with it because it's a finish.
Right. Well, and the thing is with running 100 miles, the course will vary, you know, will determine your speed. I mean, running 29 hours at the Ozark Trail or the Hawk, either one, there's a lot of technical terrain there. And
it's so much, especially like, so you're familiar with Clinton Lake. The White Trail has a Facebook support group.
I know. In fact, they were all talking about, you know, the Facebook. I'm on the Facebook support group for the White Trail. And this year, I mean, I still have the scar on my arm from a tree. That wasn't just the rocks in the trail. It's like the tree. I was watching the rocks and ran into a tree. And so I still have this scar right there on my arm from the tree that got me.
Yeah,
they came to the aid station dripping blood, and they were like, "Are you okay?"
Yeah. There was a sign that said probably about, because you go out on blue, you know, you dash on red a little bit, get back to blue, and then you come back on white. And about 3/4 of the way through white, there was a sign that they posted up. I think it was before an aid station that said, "The White Trail sucks, but you suck less."
Yeah,
and it was just a hilarious sign. I don't know if you saw that or not.
Yeah, I saw that.
That was so funny. I'm like, I needed that.
Yeah. And it's just for people who think Kansas is flat. I mean, it's just
they've never ran the Flint Hills. I mean,
yeah, the Flint Hills are there. I mean, and you know, any part of Eastern Kansas, but yeah, the White Trail is very, very techno, very rocky. And I mean, and different than Colorado rocks. I've noticed from just the travels, and I don't know if you've noticed this, the various places, the rocks just tend to be different. And, you know, I was running down in Tennessee and, it was rocky, and, but just the way the terrain felt was, it just took a different rhythm. And running in Texas, it was very, very rocky, but it was different. And so the White Trail, you know, saying it's rocky is like, it has its own personality. It really does.
It does. And it gets worse every time, and they add rocks, it seems, every single time.
Yeah.
But I mean, even comparing, you know, Clinton Lake to like my first ultra was Lake Perry Rocks. And mm-hmm. I didn't realize why it was called Rocks, but it, you know, there's rocks everywhere on that trail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. So you said you're signed up for the tough, the 24-hour Tough Mudder for next year. Is that,
yeah,
is that
in your plan? It's in Florida next year. We were debating it with my wife, or my wife and I were like, should we do it? Should we do it? And then they send an email with like the cheapest price you'll ever get on the race. And mm-hmm. you know, if we don't do this third time, because originally the goal is 75 miles like next year, because you get another special bib. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, that's doable. Like I left time on the table and I could have done that this year, but, so yeah, for 2022, I'm going back to Silver Heels and I'm going to get that hundred miler. And then I'm going to do World's Toughest down there. And it's in Pensacola, Florida this next year.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and is that always in kind of the, not the winter, fall or winter? Is it?
Yeah. It's always in November.
In November. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
it competes with all the other races that are in November. I would like to go down to Ozark again and do that course again.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's all kinds of other races I would like to do. Like my friend Jonathan, he got into Leadville and he's running Leadville.
This year. Oh, really? This year he got into Leadville?
Yep. Well, he got in it in 19. He placed at like the Austin Rattler, which is a qualifying race, and then he deferred it. So he's running it this year. And
okay.
Myself and I think a few others are going to go up and pace him and make sure he gets that thing done. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not really looking forward to it too much, but I'm pacing him down at the Outlaw. Like the Outlaw is a race.
Jonathan's running the Outlaw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's doing that before or after? He's doing that
before.
Yeah, that's right. Because the Outlaw's in February and Leadville's in the summer. The Outlaw has more elevation than Leadville.
Yeah. The Outlaw. I've heard, I know two friends that ran it. Was it last year when it was completely snowy? And
last year was, yeah, it was when I was pacing mm-hmm. Troy, or I was supposed to pace Troy. It was 6 below 0 and snow. Yep. And,
I know two girls up in north of town that finished that thing, and like just seeing their story on social media throughout the race was insane. Like,
well, and Jackie Beth, or you know, we said we both know Jackie Beth. I met Jackie Beth when she and I both went down to Outlaw to pace a lady, her trail name is Abby, mm-hmm. Catherine Ivy. She posted up on Facebook, I'm looking for pacers, and Jackie Beth and I both said sure, and so the three of us did not know each other until we met there at the race.
That's awesome.
so that's how I met Jackie Beth. But she, I saw her come through there at the aid station in the middle of the night, and she was tough. I mean, that was she hung in there and finished it.
It's like I don't necessarily want to ever run the Outlaw. I probably will at some point, but I don't do well in the cold. I think that's why I did just fine at the Hawk, because I do well when I work outside all day, every day, no matter what. So I think that helped with heat tolerance. And
yeah, in 2020, I think it was when Jackie Beth and I were down there, and it was in the 40s.
Yeah.
And so it was really very, very comfortable. In fact, I ran some of the night in short sleeves. And so I paced through the night, and I'm a team winter. You know, I run in very minimal clothing in the wintertime.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, the course was very, very tough. Mm-hmm. And it just, as looking at it as somebody who's not, there is just a lot of up and down. There are some places that I would consider runnable, but mm-hmm. a lot of it is just a big hike or trying to slide down the hills.
Yeah. He's about to start his, he's going to do some sort of training regiment, and with lots of hiking, lots of rucks, lots of, you know, it's like, well, I guess if I'm going to do like 40 miles with you, I might as well join you for some of that.
So you're doing 40 miles, you're doing two loops.
Yeah, I said if he needs me, I'll do whatever distance you need. But
yeah, there's a hill called the Devil's Butt Crack, and it's
awkward stories.
Yeah, it's it's pretty, and it's downhill. But you know, it's not even really hikeable. It's like slide on your butt down the hill.
Wow. So. Nice.
Which last year when it was all icy was an added challenge.
Yeah. Just sled down it.
Yeah. So what else do you have, like longer term goals of what you'd like to do for?
My original goal for 2022 was run at least two Western States qualifiers, because I would really like to run Western States.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that's with a lot of the, not necessarily drama, but with UTMB partnering with Ironman, there's a lot of these trail companies that, you know, are worried about them corporatizing, you know, our niche little sport that we got.
Mm-hmm.
And a race like Western States, I would hope that wouldn't be that difficult to get into for normal folks.
Well, the people I can see people posting online, the memes about, you know, ultra running memes saying, mm-hmm. you know, your chances of getting into Western States. And
I know
that
I put my name in the lottery for Leadville. You know, that'd be cool to do Leadville. You know, I would love to just continue to do Colorado races. High Lonesome is one I would love to do. I think they're lottery based too. I don't know about Hard Rock. Hard Rock would be a little bit more than I could. I might bite off more than I can chew on that one.
Yeah.
But
that's a pretty,
that's what I've done this whole time. Like, you know, always having that next bigger and, you know, badder race after the one that you just did is something that I've done this whole time, it seems. So, I mean, after Silver Heels, I don't know what would be, you know, my next 100 after that, but there's so many in Kansas that you can pick and choose from. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And it yeah. seems like there's, you know, every state is that way. I mean, they're,
yep.
they're
really, really I mean, every state is.
Yeah. Yeah. The, you know, Illinois. I mean, I'm sure that, I mean, the states in the Midwest that I'm familiar yeah. with, I mean, there's a, is it, Henri Mule is mm-hmm. is a race director that, I interviewed a guy, Ryan Steiner from, mm-hmm. on the podcast, and he was running several of those, and I the names yeah. of the races escaped me.
But I am doing I don't know, do you know who Chase Hammond is? He lives out in Hayes.
No.
He was volunteering at the Hawk, which was funny running into him, but he lives in Hayes. He's putting on races out at Wilson Lake. I don't okay. know if you've ever driven past
that,
there.
Yes, the name was ringing a bell, and I was remembering. Yes.
Yeah, he does. So he did his first race director stuff this year. He did the Hell Creek 100, which
yeah.
is what he called it. It was a 20-mile loop out of, I think it's 20 miles out of Wilson Lake, which is all kind of grassy trails, but lots of elevation.
Lots of elevation, effects. Yeah. yeah. Wilson Lake is beautiful out in central mm-hmm. Kansas. I mean, just yeah, a beautiful, it really beautiful is, area.
It's one of those hidden gems that are right out there. But I'm doing his last man standing race out there.
Okay.
And I think that's in April.
In April.
That'll be my first time doing something like that. It's the same setup as like Big's Backyard.
So is it similar distance for 4 miles?
You got a 4.1 mile loop.
4.1 mile.
You got to do that in an hour. And then you have to start at the top of the hour for your next loop. Otherwise right. you can't continue.
Right.
And you do that until like Jonathan and I are both doing it. We've got a few other Topeka runners that have signed up for it, but that's going to be a fun one.
Yeah. I had not heard about that one. Hell's Creek.
It's called this particular race is called Eternal Damnation. Is what he called it.
keeping with the hell theme, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
that's good.
Yeah. But he's really putting on a lot of good stuff. There's a couple of friends that ran the Hell Creek 100 and they said it was just, you know, top to bottom, start to finish, just incredibly put together. And, you know,
that's what I heard too.
Around. And for your first race doing that, like, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so good.
Yeah. I'll venture out there for a few more of his races.
A few of the people from the Trail Nerds have did the Hell's Creek because.
Yeah. They said it was brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. I think wasn't it fairly hot?
I think it did get hot that day.
It got hot that day, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and tell me about the, you. There's a running group in Topeka as well.
Shout out to, well, there's a couple of different ones, but we have a Facebook group, Topeka Trail Runners, but some of my, now some of my really good friends, we call ourselves the Buckleheads.
Okay.
But we talk each other into all these bad ideas of signing up for these like long distance races. And, but you know, we put together group runs. You know, if you want to come to the Topeka area, Topeka Trail Runners, we typically it's out at, you know, the Governor Trails or, you know, Clinton Lake, we'll venture out there, wherever. Sometimes it's just on the road, but they're, I've never met a more, you know, welcoming group that, you know, we support each other. We pace each other. We talk crap to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
typical, typical trail running group. Yeah.
And it's, you know, just like typical trail runner groups, all walks of life. You know, you mm-hmm. got, you know, superintendents from a school district to, you know, truck drivers to welders to, you know, just everything. It's, yeah. it's awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I stumbled upon them.
So the buckleheads are like a just a, kind of an informal group. Is that
yeah, pretty informal. That's just what we call kind of our little group. But the bigger group is Topeka Trail Runners.
Yeah,
and we all get together and host group runs and it's probably similar to Trail Nerds.
You're doing a fat ass in a couple of weeks, if I remember.
Yeah, right. Jonathan's putting that together out of Iliff Commons, which is a little bit northeast of town.
Okay. By the time this airs, I know it'll be over, but it's like,
yeah.
So, but is that something that, you know, people could you know, jump in and join if,
yeah, I mean, for sure.
Like, do you have like a Facebook group for the Buckleheads?
No, or, the Facebook group is Topeka Trail Runners.
Just Topeka Trail Runners. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the funny thing about when this airs, I'll probably have, my second son.
Yeah.
But that particular race, like I told Jonathan, he's starting it at 6 p.m. and the focus is on nighttime running,
mm-hmm.
but I'm going to be like, I'm going to look at my phone every time. And if my wife calls me, I'm going to shoot out and you never know.
hope that you have time. No. So yeah. How far is it from, I mean, you'd have to get home and then back.
Yeah. It's probably about a 15 minute drive.
Okay. That's not too bad. Not like you have to drive across town to get her and then get,
you know, the excuse for, you know, signing up for this stuff is my wife said I could. So okay. My wife said I could.
Well, that's really pretty good. I mean, she sounds like she's got a good support for you.
Oh, dude, she's awesome. She's amazing. She lets me do all this stuff and she's not a runner, but mm-hmm. she likes to tag along and she meets the other wives and meets the other, you know, if anyone else needs help, she's there to help too.
Yeah. And having people who support you is just as important. I mean, it's one of those things you really can't, I mean, you don't do it alone. Even mm-hmm. though you're out there on the trail by yourself, you still need to have people there for mm-hmm. you.
Yep. You need people there. Even, you know, late at night, you need that something to look forward to, mm-hmm. like knowing that she's going to be at that next aid station will pull me to get me to that aid station.
That really makes a big difference.
It really does. whether it's your wife or pacers or crew or, you know, even the aid station volunteers, like, you know, that they're going to be there to give you what you need, to give you the rest you need. And
yeah. And I know a lot of runners, you know, ultra runners will travel and go and just use drop bags and they show up to a race and really not know anybody. Mm-hmm. And so there's a little bit of extra mental, you know, kind of push that you've got to have your mind kind of wrapped around that to do that on your own.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's hard.
it's definitely, there is something to, you know, the idea of that you're going to have a team waiting for you and to make you, because that voice, you know, when you get to that 60, 70 mile point, you know, that voice is there that, like, well, why are you doing this? And
yeah, I think so. Like with the DNF of Silver Heels, we quit at an aid station that our wives were not at. Uh-huh. And so they
do you
they
think your wives would have talked you into stay into going?
I think they would have. I don't think they would have let us quit. They would have made us time out and miss a cutoff rather than quit ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, we made that decision there and we got a ride back to the Airbnb where they were sleeping, about to wake up to come and
meet us at the aid station. Come and meet you at the next aid station. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they were like, what are you guys doing here? Like, yeah, so we got some explaining to do.
Did the aid station people try to talk you out of quitting?
They did. They kept saying that we have time, but I was mentally checked out, and that I sat next to the fire, and that was a mistake.
So not only the chair, the chair that people say, you know, beware of the chair. If your chair's by the fire, you're just kind of screwed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unless you can rally from that, then that's another mental game right there.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Leaving the aid station that you're nice and warm and cuddly. Yeah.
Yeah. Hard. Yeah. I know that is a big thing for any ultra runner. Mm-hmm. And I see it, especially, you know, talking about looped races, you know, and you talked about the tough mudder.
Oh, yeah.
I've only done one looped run, and it was just a fat ass and, you know, kind of unofficial. And yeah. it was a quarter mile loop. It's here, the Shouse loop quarter mile loop. It's called the Shoustis. And it's coming up a couple of weeks. In fact, you got to come over and run with us. It's I'll after we get done talking, I'll tell you how to get there. It's quarter mile loop and sunrise to sunset, the Saturday that's closest to the winter solstice.
Oh, wow.
And so it's a nine hours. And so, you know, 9 hours and change. And so,
wow.
And it's, you know, bring your own food and beer and duct tape to make a beer can staff, because they tape the empties on underneath the one that they're drinking.
That's awesome. They
make a beer can staff. There are several in our group that will have the staff taller than their head by the time the day is over.
Wow. I've never drank during an ultra during a race, but
there are several. And I've only done a little bit. I've had a beer at an aid station in the middle of the night. I couldn't get calories down, and my wife said, "Here, it's like liquid bread," and handed me the beer. So
that's true.
It was calories. So I was able to do it, but I could feel it. I could feel the effects of it.
That's awesome.
It's a quarter mile, and it's a competition who can run the most most laps in 9 hours. And
that's a mental game right there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I would say so. A member of our Topeka group. Do you know Jacqueline Long?
Yeah, I've seen her on Facebook. Yes,
female beast ultra runner. She would probably thrive in something like that. she hates carrying stuff.
Okay,
so yeah. She has to have drinks laid out, or like, you know, she'll do these 1 mile 72 hour events and just go and go and go, and like, she's a beast. She's awesome. But she would thrive in something like that. That's who came to mind first. It's like, I bet you she would love that.
Yeah. Well, you tell I'm not sure. I think you have to sign up. So
yeah, if no baby has come, then I'll definitely look into that.
Yeah, you'll be on baby duty if not.
Yeah. That might be a no-go for a while.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, thank you a lot, Devin. I appreciate you taking time.
This is awesome. Thank you. Yeah, this will be good.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. Hope you enjoyed hearing about the Toughest Mudder Race series. I have to say, I've been kind of intrigued and learning more about it. It's something I've thought about, and actually had seen some of the Spartan races and those kind of obstacle course races for a while, even before I started running. And just, it was an intriguing concept. I might have to try it, the Toughest Mudder Race series. Sounds like it could have some interesting things there for me. Hey, if you enjoyed this episode and you know somebody who might like it as well, take a minute and just send them a link. I appreciate that. That is the best compliment you can give. Also, if you want the show notes for this episode or any others, you can find them at ultramindsetpodcast.run. There's also a place there you can leave comments, questions, and stories. Remember, an ultramarathon mindset is about more than just running. And I am a life coach, ultramarathon mindset. So I coach for for getting an ultramarathon mindset for runners, or also any epic thing you want to do in life, if you want to see how that can help, send me a message here through the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast.run. Oops, I said it wrong again. Ultramindsetpodcast.run. I keep wanting to add marathon in there. It is ultramindsetpodcast.run. You can contact me there, voice message or text. You can also send me a DM on Instagram. It is at Eric Dieter. And be glad to see if I can help you out with any epic, anything that you want to do to try to move yourself forward toward your epic thing. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.